your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be playing a couple of clips here at the beginning of our program tonight. We broadcast every Saturday night, 7 to 9. And it's The Secret Truth, and I'm a co-host along with Charlotte Littlefield Brown. The first two clips, the first one is going to be Gary Wayne, author of Genesis 6, Conspiracy, about Christian types of legends and so forth. And the second interview will be with Shipp, Kevin Shipp, former CIA whistleblower and so forth. He calls himself a constitutional restorist. He's restoring the Constitution. So here we go with Gary Wayne, then we'll follow that by the Kevin Shipp. These interviews were last weekend up in Dallas, Texas, in Grapevine, Texas, to be exact.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, and we're at the Operation Classified in Grapevine, Texas, put on by John B. Wells and his wife. They have done a tremendous job up here, and we're going around at the different exhibitor tables and talking to authors and so forth, and there's so many that are interesting. On my left today is Gary Wayne. He's a author of the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. Welcome to our program, Gary.
Well, so happy to be here and glad you dropped by and looking forward to the discussion that we're having and inviting anybody who still has time to come down and join the conference. There's still time. Glad to be talking with you.
Gary, what motivated you to write this book? Was it a year or a decade type of project, or did you write it in just a few years? What kind of a time scheme did it take you to write this book and accumulate this knowledge to do this?
Yeah, you could look at a time frame of over 30 years in terms of the research before and as my first book and hopefully a series of books. I started writing the Genesis 6 Conspiracy in 1998. So I had it kind of finished and ready to start getting published in 2012, continued to work on it, and finally got it published in 2016. So it's been decades in the process, and the research is absolutely amazing. For people who start to read the book, they just can't believe how much information is in one book.
I know in the Bible it speaks about these great giants that cohabitated with the earth women or ladies and spawned some type of hybrids or something. Well, what is that about? Is that a scripture that repeats itself, or is it just in a small part of the Bible?
Well, we only get one verse in Genesis 6, 1 through 4, where we actually have a smoking gun where fallen angels go to the daughters of human females to create giants, which goes back to the Hebrew word nephil, and I am for male plural, or most people are familiar with the word Nephilim comes from. And those were the demigod giants, actual giants of before the flood. But we also have giants that show up after the flood, and many giants that show up after the flood. And except for two cases in Numbers 13:33, where it's describing the Anakim as descendants of giants, which goes back to Nephilim, the other places where it says giants, like for the Emin or the Zamzuzim or the Avim and on and on and on with all these nations that do not go back to the table of nations in Genesis 10 or 1 Chronicles, that word goes back to Rapha and Raphaim for male plural, and defined as a tribe of giants as what Nephilim are. So they come up over and over and over, and even up to the time of the conquest, and even connected to Goliath as going back to Rapha as a giant in the time of King David.
I know Stan Deo and Steve Quayle out of Montana have done extensive research in this area also. Is this an extraterrestrial connection, or what would you say there?
Well, you could loosely call it an extraterrestrial connection because fallen angels are not from this planet. They're from the spirit world. They're from heaven. Whether that's in a different dimension or a different location, I think it's in a different dimension. So that's the only way that I would describe them as an extraterrestrial, because they are not from this earth. They are the angels that were created by God, who rebelled and who follow Satan. And as, you know, similar to what the first book of Enoch would talk about. And there were the seraphim angels that are talked about in Isaiah 6, and they were the fiery serpent flying angels, and as talked about in Daniel 4, as watchers that Enoch relates them to. These are the sons of God in Genesis 6.
You know, is there any Kurdistan connection? I know the word Shaitan seems to come to my mind. The Two Babylons book by Hislop was written a number of years ago. And back in his notes in the back of that, he states out and singles out the word Shaitan. Was there any discovery in your of that word or connections back to the Kurdistan area or not?
Not for me in my research. I haven't found anything with Shaitan, but understand the Kurdistan region is vibrant with giant history. And it overlaps and describes many similar accounts, and particularly when it comes to Nimrod and also with Babel. So, but I have not found in my research, and haven't really been looking for that connection for Shaitan, but I'm sure if I spent some time on it, by from what you're referencing, that there's probably some connections there.
You know, there's a myth, I guess, what you'd call, of a great battle that occurred around 2400 BC between Nimrod and Haik, who was the founder of the Armenia country of Armenia. Do you have any knowledge of that, or explanations in your book of any kind, or notes?
Oh, absolutely, and I actually mention it in my book, that battle that you're referring to. And that was a war of giants. They're at least filled with ranks of giants and humans. And as I recall, that is the battle that recollection calls for the death of Nimrod, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes, it's stated by some and written by some. Armenia was established by a couple of Jesus' disciples, so their church today ties back to the original. Despazini, is that the word I would say?
Despazini.
Yeah,
yes.
Despazini, which was the family of Jesus that went out and established some of the first churches. Now, what's interesting is Haik launched an era during this attack, which was on the shores of Lake Van, which was then within sight of the higher mountain there, okay, Ararat, okay, and there's the lesser and the higher Ararat, and this era supposedly pierced the armor of Nimrod and killed him instantly. Is this your recollection or of the event or not?
Yeah, very, very similar to that. And also understanding that Lake Van was known as a place where watchers were, and a lot of trade was somehow done with the watchers. I wish I knew what that trade was, because that's a very interesting term that we would be trading with angels. So I'm not sure whether it was for knowledge in terms of work and whatever, but I do know there was some sort of trade going on with the watchers at Lake Van.
Well, let's page forward a few thousand years to the Young Turks. Well, they carried out a genocide against the Armenians. Is there any connection there that you found in your research?
No, I've not gone down that path on that research. Sorry.
Okay, I've looked at that, and I see possibly, but I mean, how can you prove this? I communicated with the Historical Society of Armenia one time, and I came up with zilch on any further advance. But Haik is considered to be the father of Armenia. Now,
yes,
you say
yes.
Here in your book, in your your subtitle, how secret societies and the descendants of giants plan to enslave humankind. Elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I bring into this whole sort of narrative is a holistic narrative from Genesis 6 right through to the end time. And to understand that, you need to understand the organizational structure. And so in the beginning, you have, according to polytheists, that there's something called the seven sciences that is going to be later patterned into the seven sciences, but knowledge taught to Adam while in Eden. This is from the polytheists. And that this knowledge is passed on to Cain and then to Seth, because obviously Abel is slain by Cain. And when Cain is ostracized, he takes this knowledge in a direction to lead people away from God. Now, his firstborn son, Enoch, develops this nation significantly. And we see some of this knowledge with the cities that Cain was building, and actually names the first one after Enoch. And so this is the masonry part of the knowledge, which is the fifth science. And so Enoch develops this knowledge even more, splits them into what we know today as the seven liberal sciences. In the craft, they would call it the seven sacred sciences. And they're developing this knowledge up to about the sixth generation and the days of Noah, when all of a sudden we have the watchers come back in, the seraphim angels we were talking about earlier, who are going to mate with the human females. And at this point in time, there's going to be illicit knowledge that also is coming from the gods in the polytheist sort of version and the fallen angels in the Christian version that is going to partner with this knowledge. So what happens now is they develop the mystical religions to protect the knowledge and the learning and with the rituals and to keep it from the mundane and the non-pure blood.
The uninitiated, right.
They're not initiated.
Not the deplorables, right? Not,
well, that's what they call us today.
You know, it seems like the best people that I've associated with in the last few years since I've been working in this area for about 38 years, the deplorable side are the best people in the world.
We are.
You
we,
know what I mean?
We
and they're very much Christian.
We are the
based
salt,
and,
we are the
know.
Salt of the earth and the meek, and we
they're
will
the
inherit
scum
the
now,
earth.
According to some media, mainline media out there, you know. But what I say about mainline media is that mainline media mainlines dope to idiots. You know what I mean? It's got a bunch of addicts out there to that mainstream media that that mainline dopes to idiots sometimes. Yeah. And I was there. I was an idiot at one time.
I think we all were.
I think we begin with in a state of ignorance and darkness, and there's a flowering that occurs in my life and probably yours. Did that occur in your life? And your when did you get religious or religious oriented or begin to subscribe to a God-centered view? When did that happen?
Well, my story is I have a brother who came along and said, if you got the courage, I want you to read this book. And the book was in 1980, and it was published in the 70s, and it was by Hal Lindsey, who wrote The Late Great Planet Earth. And it's
Hal Lindsey,
And so I read it, and it scared the socks off me. And so that led me to, well, I need to verify whether or not what this guy is saying is accurate or not. And the only way I could do that was to go into the Bible and start reading it, trying to verify it. And that led me back to God. And so that was the big turning point. And from there, I matched up my passion for prophecy as I was verifying a lot of what Hal was saying, and matched that up with my passion for history and mythology. And that sort of led to writing the first book. And I just wanted to go back to a little bit to finish off on that question we had.
Yes, go ahead. Elaborate on that.
About the secret societies in the antediluvian time. And so not only did they develop the mystical religions, but they also developed secret societies back then. And this is where the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians and all these secret organizations, and there's just different levels of them, take their origination back to. And their greatest patriarchs are Enoch, son of Cain, Tubal-Cain, who's the son of Lamech, Jubal, and Nama, as well as Nimrod, who they believe wrote the first constitution for the Masons after the flood, and used that knowledge that was developed to create Babel City and Babel Tower, and was the first Grand Master. So to understand the antediluvian time, our history, and going into the end time, we need to understand the organizational structure of the giants and the Nephilim, their bloodlines, the religious polytheist religion, and the secret societies, and how they use knowledge, and how that organizational structure works together to do what they want to do, because it's all coming in the end time with the same allegories and same type of agenda and scenario, because nothing is new under the sun, and it will be like the days of Noah, as what Jesus said.
Have you ever heard of the Wilhelmsbad Enclave meeting that occurred in 1782, right outside of northeast of Frankfurt? Supposedly, it called together the Masonic leaders of the lodges at the time in Europe, and it made them swear an oath to the Illuminati system. You've ever heard of such a thing?
Well, the Illuminati is certainly part of the whole group, and there was a large meeting in 1770, and I think that's the same one that I write about in the book, if I'm matching up. And they actually take that history back and list those names and patriarchs all the way through history, touting that continuation of that knowledge and organizational structure throughout history. But the Illuminati is they are enlightened, which the adepts like to call themselves. So sometimes there's a miscommunication of what an illuminated person are, which is an adept, and what the Illuminati organization was that was originally created in the 1500s, although most people date it to about 1760. And so illuminated adept in Freemasonry is the adept core and the inner circle of Freemasonry today, but it still falls below the Rosicrucians. So they're high, but they're not super high. But they do like to call themselves illuminated and Illuminati thereof. So they're kind of interchangeable terms.
Well, some people find them very evil today. Some groups do. And so, I mean, you get a good reason. Yeah. Well, yeah. Illuminati. Yeah, I guess. Well, if you look, okay, at the book that was written by Robison, okay, John Robison, who was an esteemed scientist, a member of the society in Europe, the Royal Society, and he wrote a book called Proofs of a Conspiracy about 1786 or so. And he was invited into the Illuminati system in Europe, and then all of a sudden he decided he didn't want to do this. He wrote this book and sent it to George Washington. Have you ever heard such a story?
Yeah, I've heard about that, and in the context of the Royal Society, and I now understand what you're talking about when you say the Illuminati system as opposed to the Illuminati.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Society.
You're saying that a person can be illuminated in general, and that just means to have an enlightened view or head towards a highly spiritual self, you know. And then you have the organization, you could say, called the Illuminati.
Yeah.
So I know the word sin or chi is a concept that was originated out of a Frenchman, that actually it was the control of the political system by the secret societies. And so I think that a Wizard of Oz, remember, behind the curtain there, there's a wizard controlling everything.
Yep.
And so today, I think that's pretty close to the concept I would agree with.
That is, there's always that curtain, and there's always people behind that curtain that are controlling everything. There is no doubt about that. And that what we see is what they want us to see. And when people look at bloodlines or the powerful people, they're the ones they want us to see, but they are not the true money and not the true power. We don't really get a chance to see that unless they're of a royal sort of nature and are influential in the higher sort of organizational structure of the pure blood and secret societies, because again, they're still interrelated. You just got to get to the Rosicrucian level, top 50% and higher, now you've seen a complete emergence of secret society and pure blood.
Well, H.G. Wells described our state of being, if you want to say that, as an idea prison, see? In other words, we have a confluencing of ideas coming from all around us, and they condition and program us and create a world, so-called worldview, and then we become entrapped or imprisoned by that worldview. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. They are in propaganda and misinformation mode all the time, always have been. And I think the big turning point in terms of the propaganda portion when they started to lose some control would be the start of the organization that you mentioned earlier that was created by the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons, which was the Royal Society. And through science and education and the influence into the media and into the literature, which
is scientism.
And Rosicrucian is how they were able to get their people to dominate entertainment and literature. We have been in propaganda mode for at least 500 years, and it's only going to increase as we go into the end time.
Gary Wayne, we're coming to the end of this interview. What kind of a closing comments or would you care to make here toward the end of this interview?
Well, one of the things that I like people to kind of understand is that if we are going into the end times, and I think it's on the horizon, and we don't know how fast that, you know, it can come about, but cataclysms can bring it about quickly, or contrived cataclysms, whether it's war or collapse or whatever, is that we need to start to understand prophecy. But you can't understand prophecy unless you understand prehistory, because so much of prophecy is defined within the allegory of prophecy, but all defined within the Bible. So if we want to understand what's going to happen in the end time, we need to understand what happened at Babel. We need to understand what happened in Genesis 6. We need to understand what happened about the fallen angels. We need to understand everything that happened so that we're not going to be deceived, and that we can actually, that we actually do not have prophecies used against us, because the false prophet and Antichrist are going to twist those prophecies to assert the pedigree and legitimacy of Antichrist, and they will counterfeit everything. So unless we can understand prophecy in the right context, we're open for deception.
Well, Gary, Wayne, thank you very much. I'm here at the Operation Classified in Grapevine, Texas at the Hilton. And I've just been discussing this subject in his book, his latest book, The Genesis 6 Conspiracy, with Gary Wayne. Thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, and very much enjoyed the conversation. I'm hoping we raised a little bit of curiosity with the audience.
Well, thank you, Gary, and you've got a wonderful book here.
Thank you.
Next is Kevin Shipp. He has quite a story about extracting himself from the CIA without any prison time and so forth, and he did it the right way. And he's been speaking out there in the main audience earlier today and over the last couple of days. And we're here with Sunday and doing a short interview with Kevin Shipp. And so here we go with Kevin Shipp, a former CIA, an extraction. They called him a whistleblower, but he's a very fine person. But here we go with Kevin Shipp right now.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me this evening is Kevin Shipp. And Kevin, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's great to be on. Appreciate it.
I tell you, I really enjoyed your speeches, and you're talking about, would you classify yourself as a whistleblower or what? How would you describe yourself?
Well, some call me a whistleblower. I call myself a recovering CIA agent. I came out and blew the whistle on the belly of the beast. I like to refer to myself more as a constitutionalist.
Okay, I'll go for that.
In the Constitution, and that's where I drew the line. But, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Well, you know, I've followed you on YouTube, you know, and this is the first time I've actually met you in person and so forth, and I'm very highly impressed. And you describe this swamp or the deep state in a different way than anyone else. You divide it into two groups. Tell our listening audience and viewing audience how you describe it in two separate groups.
Yes, having come from the belly of the beast, there's a lot of talk about the deep state, and it's good, and it's accurate. Coming from inside the deep state itself, what I observed is it is not just the deep state. There's something that I call the shadow government and the deep state, and they're two separate entities, although they're connected together. The shadow government is the parts of our government that function under the juggernaut of secrecy. There's a global network of secrecy, in this case operated by the CIA, that not even Congress can penetrate. It rules by secrecy. It controls Congress by secrecy, the president, and the judiciary, all three branches, by this unbridled use of secrecy. The deep state is the military-industrial congressional complex, as Eisenhower originally called it, and that's run by money, greed, selling bombs, bullets, and war. The shadow government influences the deep state with the power of secrecy, putting these companies under CIA secrecy agreements, and all their employees, from secretaries to CEOs, all bound by CIA secrecy agreements, which threatens prison if they divulge that operation to anyone. So that's how the shadow government controls the deep state, but really they're two separate things.
Well, that is really intriguing, because no one, I've been researching this for a number of decades now, no one quite describes it as well as you do. What do you think, reclassifying the thing that came out of the Eisenhower administration, the military industrial, I've added financial complexes. What do you think about the financial involved into this? Have you studied that at all?
I have, and I've have a lecture I give on what I call which largely has been unknown, called the Secret Intelligence Industrial Complex. And these are Lockheed Martin, which is essentially is the major spying arm of the CIA. They do about 80% of that. Then you got SEIC, CAIC, which is involved in the torture program. These are all secret companies that work for the NSA, the CIA, the NGA, and the NRO. And these companies are huge, they're massive, they're unelected, they do top secret, unreported work that not even Congress knows about under these huge contracts underneath the CIA and the NSA. So you have a whole different, not a military industrial complex, but a secret intelligence industrial complex that is plugged in to our intelligence agencies.
Well, that is fascinating. I've been studying this financial system for years, and the city of London is right at the core of that financial system. Have you looked at the city of London, the financial center, at all?
Well, you know, you talk about the New World Order that started over in the UK, and actually they're still pushing for that. And all of this is tied in with London, and especially the United States, with the bankers, The CIA actually goes into countries to topple governments because of the oil and because of the resources, the mineral resources, or the strategic position. Not national security, not to defend the American people, but to advance the central banks, much of which are influenced by the UK and Britain. And that whole process actually dictates what the CIA is going to do, what government it's going to try to overthrow or infiltrate next. It's all financial.
Right. You know, I've studied the city of London, and they have their own police force and so forth. And it's actually they're an entity unto themselves, a separate and from the greater London area itself.
Yes. And of course, they were very upset when we seceded from Britain. But they've got us back financially now because they're controlling our banking system. So they're back. Most Americans don't know that. But the UK has come back and taken control of the U.S. via the banking system, the Federal Reserve, and the financial system is now largely controlled from London.
Right. We supported Ron Paul early on, and he had a series of End the Fed. And do you think that President Trump is going to be addressing the Fed problem at all or not?
He's addressing it already. He has threatened an audit for the first president in a long, long time. I think he's listened to Ron Paul, who I think is a real constitutionalist. And Trump has alluded to someday the Fed needs to be audited. Now, the question is, does he, in the role of the president, have the power to go up against that entire secret system? It's not federal. It's not a federal agency. It's private. And it doesn't have a reserve. It has no gold, no nothing. It's staffed by foreign banks who operate in secret with a secret budget and has never been audited. Trump has indicated that it needs to be audited, which is huge. But will he be able to do it with all the other wars he's fighting? We'll see.
Well, yeah, this is, we've got some, production here in the main room that's coming over. A little bit of a thunder and lightning program.
Right,
but isn't that right? What's going on?
Interviewers
it's thunder season. And lightning time.
It's kind of.
And you know what? I admire you and really respect you, Kevin, because you stood up. You went through hell trying to come out of that system, did you not?
I did. They tried to eliminate me twice. They went after my family who are still suffering. They took away my retirement. They hit me with a state secrets privilege. I had enough evidence. The federal judge ordered them to a mediated settlement. I had affidavits. I had environmental test samples. I had photographs of them following our family. So the judge ordered them to a settlement. They settled. They signed it. I have the document on my website, which used to be sealed. And we won. So what they did was they turned around and they invoked the state's secrets privilege, shut our case down, sealed all my evidence, even from Congress, and then threatened me with prison if I talked about my evidence to anyone. So after a good bit of thought and prayer, I said, oh, no, you don't. Not to my Constitution.
Well, those people are on the side of big government, or the side that I'm not on.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm definitely on trying to reduce this government down to some manageable size.
Yeah.
But Trump's trying to do that. And when he brought this word up, nationalism, you know, then they immediately associated him with Hitler and everything else. Boy, this media is something else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the media wants to impeach. They want Donald Trump gone. He's the first president since JFK that has challenged the CIA, the NSA, and the FBI senior levels. In other words, the shadow government. And they're terrified. They've got skeletons in the closet. They're afraid they're going to really be audited. Their budget is secret. They're afraid he's going to see what that budget is. So they're trying to destroy him and get him out of office because he's the only president since JFK that is scrutinizing what the shadow government especially and the deep state is doing. They want him gone. And they're of course, connected to the mainstream media.
Are some people equating him with and describing him as an Andrew Jackson or not?
Oh, I think he's that's why he has a statue of Andrew Jackson, I think, behind him. Big time.
Because Andrew Jackson was an enemy of the banks. He closed down the banks. During his administration, he did close down the banks.
He shut down the banks and he invited the people into the White House.
You know what? Trump is a working workaholic the Oval Office.
No one
has worked as hard as he has in the Oval Office.
No.
I see him working night and day.
Most other presidents are speech givers. Everything they're done is written. Their whole schedule is detailed. They go out and they get up and they read the teleprompter and they give a speech. Not Donald Trump. He's in there working. I don't know where he gets the energy, but he's in there actually doing the work instead of just giving speeches.
Well, I've had a little differences with him because of that ego thing. You know what I mean? I mean, gosh, if he could overcome that. I broadcast during their election. I said the real challenge to President Trump will be if he can overcome the ego, and then I think he can make it even better and become greater. You know what I mean? But that ego, it pops off too much.
It's giant.
You know what I mean?
Well, you got to look at it this way, though. If he didn't have that kind of ego and then fearlessness,
I know what you're saying.
He wouldn't be able to do the job.
You accomplish things. Men accomplished a lot with egos, but there comes a time where you got to manage your ego and not let it manage and dominate you.
There's some times when the tweets come out, we're like, I wish he hadn't said that.
I mean, my ego, I was ruining it for me.
Yeah.
I was young.
Yeah.
I'm not anymore young.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Kevin Shipp, for being with us this evening. And we certainly do appreciate all the hard work. And we certainly do value your care for America is evident in your action, your words, and your love for the country, and your love for your family.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate very much what you're doing. So it's great. It's great to come on.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was Kevin Shipp. Coming up next is a clip from Joseph Farrell, and he's revealing some really indictments that took place over in Malaysia, but of Goldman Sachs officials. But he's saying that those indictments were brought about by the Justice Department in Brooklyn, not the Lower Manhattan Office of the Department of Justice. So, boy, that is interesting. Here's what he had to say about that.
Hello, everybody. This is Joseph P. Farrell with news and views from the Nefarium on Thursday, November 15th, 2018. All right, now, let's get down to business. There are some really weird financial stories going on. And I have some high octane speculation, and I want to stress it is really high octane speculation because there is not, to my knowledge thus far, any evidence connecting these two stories to my high octane speculation. But I suspect, reading between the lines a bit, that there are a number of developments that may be in process. The first article is from Armstrong Economics. It's titled Goldman Sachs Criminal Charges at Last? And I'm reading from the first few several paragraphs in this article. Then I want to go to a second article about another indictment that has just been handed down to an individual connected with JP Morgan. All right. So there's lots of stuff here to concentrate on. Let's start with the Goldman Sachs article first. Quote, the U.S. Justice Department's charges against individuals relating to the pillaging of the Malaysia Investment Fund, known as 1MDB, offers several new insights into the global multi-billion dollar scandal. But there is something the press is overlooking. The senior Goldman Sachs banker in Asia who pled guilty to U.S. bribery and money laundering charges and his deputy was arrested in Malaysia, was brought by federal prosecutors in Brooklyn not the Manhattan Southern District of New York, which the bankers own right down to the foundation stones. The Brooklyn prosecutors have laid out conspiracy allegations related to Goldman Sachs' lucrative fundraising for the Malaysian wealth fund 1MDB. The fact that he has already pled guilty means he has a cooperation deal. Note that. To give up more information on the inside of Goldman Sachs. The entire scandal came to light, came in right on target in May of 2018. It resulted in the political overthrow of the president, and the new finance minister discovered computers that even the highest ranking bureaucrats could not access when they got into government offices. Computers were set up to prevent access by anyone other than one or two people. Evidence of massive corruption was what turned the election, speaking of the Malaysian election, on May 9th, 2018. I have been writing that all of my sources from Asia to the Middle East pointed to outright corruption in Malaysia and the deep involvement of Goldman Sachs. Now, let me stop here and just remind everybody, Goldman Sachs was one of the survivors during the 2008 bailout, and it played a major role in the asset stripping in Greece, all right? So there's a lot connected to what's going on, and particularly that business that these people have pled guilty and are receiving probably reduced sentences because of cooperation agreements to give up more information, all right? This is crucial. This is huge, folks. Anyway, continuing. I knew dealers who bid on the project and found it went to Goldman when it made no economic sense. The feeling in the trading rooms was plain and simple. Something was seriously wrong. Goldman Sachs' role, I wrote back in 2015, had been highly criticized in the Malaysian media, pardon me, and political circles after it emerged that 1MDB sovereign wealth fund paid hundreds of millions of dollars to the bank for helping it raise $6.5 billion in three bond deals in 2012 and 2013. Goldman Sachs earned around $590 million in fees plus commissions and expenses from underwriting the bonds, according to Reuters. The reported fees are highly excessive, nearing 10% when such fees are typically only 1% in bond underwriting. Since May 2018, there was talk about filing suit against Goldman Sachs for its role in this scandal. I warned that filing a lawsuit against them in New York City, where they own the courts, had little chance of success, and Goldman knew that. The criminal charges were not brought by the Southern District of New York, but by the prosecutors across the river in Brooklyn. Donald Trump should launch an investigation against the courts in Manhattan, just as Franklin D. Roosevelt did back in 1931 with the Seabury investigations. The political corruption in New York City is pervasive. The press will not write about it, and everything remains hidden. Just perhaps the competition of Brooklyn against Manhattan may open a crack through which some light might appear. All right, so remember, we have a deal, a plea agreement, to give up more information against Goldman Sachs for suspicious financial activity in Malaysia amounting to billions of dollars in bonds. All right, now let me go to the next story here. This is a story that runs on Reuters. It's very short, but again, there's a lot going on between the lines here. The title of the article is Former J.P. Morgan Trader Pleads Guilty to Manipulating U.S. Metals Market for Years. And I'm reading from the first two and the last two paragraphs. I'm only skipping the middle paragraph here in this article. All right. An ex-JP Morgan Chase trader has admitted to manipulating the U.S. markets of an array of precious metals for about 7 years, and he has implicated his supervisors at the bank. John Edmonds, 36, pleaded guilty to one count of commodities fraud and one count each of conspiracy to commit wire fraud, price manipulation, and spoofing, according to a Tuesday release from the U.S. Department of Justice. Edmonds spent 13 years at the New York-based J.P. Morgan until leaving last year, according to his LinkedIn account. As part of his plea, Edmonds said that from 2009 through 2015, note the date, 2009, through 2015, he conspired with other J.P. Morgan traders to manipulate the prices of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium futures contracts on exchanges run by the CME Group. He and others routinely placed orders that were quickly canceled before the trades were executed, a price-distorting practice known as spoofing. Bottom two paragraphs. Of note for J.P. Morgan, the world's biggest investment bank by revenue, Edmonds, a relatively junior employee with the title of vice president, said that he learned this practice from more senior traders and that his supervisors at the firm knew of his actions. So in other words, stop and think now. A major investment bank committing spoofing acts to manipulate the price of bullion and other metals commodities futures. All right, that's huge, folks. And note that when the activity starts, it's 2009. Last paragraph. Edmonds pled guilty under a charging document known as an information. Prosecutors routinely use them to charge defendants who have agreed to cooperate with an ongoing investigation of other people or entities. End quote. Now, let me give you what my high octane, without a shred of evidence, this is my suspicion. Having just received these stories today, haven't had time to research any of this, but here's my suspicion. This has to deal with the 2008 bailouts, with the control files that Catherine Fitz talks about, and for those of you overseas who do not know and who have not been following this story, in the United States right now, there is a lot of discussion in the alternative media field about the vast number of sealed indictments. They're well in their thousands now. And this is, folks, this is record. We're talking about so many sealed indictments that it's not even funny. It's astronomically way beyond anything that we have seen before. It's, last count I saw it was well over 40,000. That's huge. That's a huge amount of sealed indictments. And the speculation, just to let everybody know, the speculation that's been running rampant in this country is that this has something to do with President Trump draining the swamp and shutting down the pedophilia networks and so on and so forth. It may very well have to deal with some of those activities, but these stories suggest to me that there's much more involved with some of these sealed indictments, because remember what prosecutors do. They go after middle management people. They get the information on them. Then they strike a plea agreement with them, and those people in turn become witnesses against people higher up in the food chain. And the fact that this Edmonds pled guilty, and we see a similar deal being going down in the Brooklyn court, not Manhattan, against Goldman Sachs, tells me that many of these sealed indictments may have to deal with the financial skullduggery that led up to the 2008 financial crisis and the subsequent bailouts. Because I go back to something I said when those bailouts were occurring on the late George Ann Hughes's Bite Show. Many of those bankers got up in front of Congress, and when they demanded that there be no congressional oversight as to what they were going to do with that money, I had at the time, and I still have this suspicion, that that's the kind of behavior that you expect from someone who has a gun pointed to their head. In other words, someone was pressuring these bankers to arrange for that deal and insist on no oversight because, of course, they were going to use that money for criminal purposes.
That was Joseph Farrell, and he's saying that there was nefarious intent when they secured these monies, you could say, back in 2008 for nefarious purposes. And so he's saying for criminal purposes is what he's saying. So we're getting in now to possibly that these sealed indictments and these other going-ons are going to reach to the very top of the financial institutions, because these two were, one, the first one he was talking about with Goldman Sachs, and the second one with J.P. Morgan. And he even went on, I'm not going to play any more of the clip, but he also said that this could reach into Europe, into Deutsche Bank. And Deutsche Bank had some very, very suspicious deaths over the years of some of their key people and some of their staff members. But this is opening up now. What Judicial Watch has just recently come up with is a court judgment order that's ordering Hillary Clinton to answer three questions. And I'm just going to put a real fast clip up here of what Judicial Watch was saying. Here we go.
Hi, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with breaking news about a new Judicial Watch lawsuit on the Spygate scandal. We sued the Defense Department for information on high-priced contracts it had with Spygate figure Stephen Halper. Halper allegedly was used by the Obama FBI and Justice Department to target the Trump campaign in a spy operation. We want to know why the Defense Department was paying him money, and was that agency also part of the effort to take out the Trump campaign?
The additional, that was about Halper there. The additional court order they got was against Hillary, requiring her to answer three questions about the email server and so forth. It was very, very insightful, the three questions. I don't know. She ordered way back. She ordered like 20 out of 29 questions. I don't remember or something like that, to that effect. So we're not going to get much out of her. What's coming up is X-22. He has some, Dave has some really good insights on a number of subjects here. We're going to play a brief clip of him. So here we go right now.
Hi and welcome. You're listening to the X-22 Report. My name is Dave and this is episode 1715BN. Today's date is November 13th, 2018 and the title of the episode is Election Fraud Revealed in 45. Executive Order is the Key. Now, the deep state, they are incredibly desperate right now. You can see what they're doing. They're pushing their agenda to the extreme. And you know they're not going to let up just yet. But there is something coming. And it's not just the indictments. It's not just the D-class. There's something else coming that is going to change everything. We're going to be talking about that in a little bit. But first, let's go into what CNN is doing right now. We know that Trump banned Jim Acosta from the White House. And CNN right now is suing the White House on First Amendment and Fifth Amendment grounds. The lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., and they're going to be pushing this as hard as they possibly can. Mueller, he is set to issue new indictments maybe today or tomorrow, and people are talking about the indictments where it's going to be Donald Trump Jr., Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi, and again, this has nothing to do with Russian collusion. It has to do with absolutely nothing. If you notice, all the stuff that Mueller is throwing out there has to do with absolutely nothing. We see Representative Eric Swalwell. He's out there screaming and yelling, and we have to remember what Q says. Those people that scream and yell the loudest, they're the ones that are hiding, protecting their corruption. So he tweeted out, "The days of presidential immunity are over, gone. No more free passes to cash in on access to the Oval Office. No more colluding with Russia. And we'll see if you're a tax cheat. America is putting a balance of power on your abuses of power. Welcome to democracy." Representative Eric Swalwell. Now remember, the deep state, they do believe they are in control. They believe, with all this election fraud going on, with trying to get their people into place, they will have control of the Senate and the House to push their agenda and push Trump out of office using impeachment. And we can see there are counter moves. And the one thing they didn't count on is a very specific counter move. But Schumer, right now, he is threatening to add protection to Mueller. And he's going to add this to the spending bill. Because he's saying that no one should control Mueller. He should just be out there doing whatever he needs to do, which is absolutely ridiculous. And they don't want Whitaker in charge of Mueller. Remember, Sessions recused himself. Sessions was activated, which meant he was going to resign, which then allowed the executive order, the Vacancy Act, to go into play to put Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general for 210 days. Did not need a Senate confirmation. This was all planned. And you can see right now, they're sweating over that little maneuver, and they don't know what to do about it. They're stuck. We see right now, Turkey, and we talked about this in a couple reports ago, they released the audio recording of Saudi journalist Khashoggi as he was getting murdered in the Saudi consulate. And we see that certain countries received it. France said they never did. And the U.S. says they received it, and they listened to it. Now, Bolton was out there saying, listen, there is no evidence whatsoever that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the killing whatsoever. There's nothing in these recordings that even point the finger to him. So right now, there's nothing. What happened to the video? Why did they just give the audio? Where's the video part of this? And I think what's going to happen as time goes on is that the truth is going to come out that this was actually ordered by the deep state. And this was pushed by the deep state to try to get Trump and the Patriots to do something, to place sanctions on Saudi Arabia, to bring down the system. But again, there's moves and there's counter moves. We see right now Merkel, who is not going to run once again in Germany, she is siding with Macron right now that they should have an EU army. And we know that Trump was bashing Macron. Actually, one of his tweets is, Emmanuel Macron suggests building its own army to protect Europe against the US, China, and Russia, but it was Germany in World War I and II. How did that work out for France? They were starting to learn German in Paris before the US came along. Pay for NATO or not. And we see that Macron's approval rating is very low. The same thing with Merkel. And they're trying to do whatever they possibly can to hold on. Everything is shifting right now. Everything is changing. Actually, Trump tweeted out, the problem is that Emmanuel suffers from a very low approval rating in France, 26%, and an unemployment rate of almost 10%. He was just trying to get in onto another subject. By the way, there is no country more nationalist than France. Very proud people, and rightfully so. Make France great again. So we see that Trump is acknowledging that Macron's approval rating is dropping, and dropping fast. The countries know, the people know, if you're working for them or you're not working for them. And the mainstream media, the deep state, they tried to, you know, cover all this up. They make you believe, when you listen to the mainstream media, that everyone wants them, that everything is great, that what they're doing is what the people want. And usually it is not. We see that there is more fake news being pushed out there. Again, with North Korea, the New York Times put out a story about North Korea developing missile bases. And Trump tweeted out right off the bat saying, the story in the New York Times concerning North Korea developing missile bases is inaccurate. We fully know about the sites being discussed, nothing new, and nothing happened out of the normal. Just more fake news. I'll be the first to let you know if things go bad. Remember, Trump and Kim Jong-un, they trade letters. This way, they cannot be intercepted. They have a carrier. They open it up. They read it. They know what's going on. They're in sync. But again, the deep state, they don't like this because they can't capture the chatter. They can't understand what is going on. So they continually make up these stories that things are going south in North Korea when they're really not. Actually, they were pushing the story that North Korea was going to fire missiles at the U.S., use nuclear weapons, and in the whole time they were putting those stories out, there were peace talks behind the scenes. So right now, the mainstream media has been cut off from what is really going on. Remember, they used to have a link to the intelligence agencies and to the deep state, and they kept them up to date of what was going on. And they told the stories they wanted the mainstream media to put out there. Now, the mainstream media, they're stuck. They don't know what's going on, and they're just making up stories to try to put pressure on Trump and the Patriots, but it doesn't work anymore. Now, Trump put out a tweet, and we're going to be going into Q's posts, and he said, "I just approved an expedited request for a major disaster declaration of the state of California. Wanted to respond quickly in order to alleviate some of the incredible suffering going on. I'm with you all the way. God bless all the victims and families affected." And the fires are absolutely terrible in California. A lot of people are losing their homes. Everyday people are losing their homes, and it is a complete disaster. Let's move on to post 2479. We're going to be going back to this post because Q put up, "What if the below could be proven?" and put up that map again of the illegals and all the stronghold voting areas for the deep state. And Q went on to say, "One, election plus deep party officials filled out many thousands of blank ballots." And went on to 2, 3, 4 about, you know, deliberately organizing non-citizens, destroyed legal ballots and things like that. And then Q went on to say, "Who safeguards blank ballots? Who issues blank ballots?" Well, that is the supervisor of elections. That is Brenda Snipes. She is the one that does all this, and there's different ones in different counties. So what does the supervisor of elections do? Well, they conduct all public elections, register voters, and issue voter information cards. Remove voters from the registered voter rolls who no longer live in Florida, are deceased, or for any other reason are no longer eligible to vote in Florida. Now, can they easily leave them on there? Of course. Think about that for a second. Change information on registered voter rolls when a change request is received. Name, address, party affiliation. Can they go ahead and take the blank ballots and do whatever they want with them? Of course they can. I mean, it's against the law, but they've been caught doing it. Send advance notice of election to voters who are overseas in the military or who request notification. Accept mail ballot requests and send, receive, and verify mail ballots. Qualify candidates for county offices. And it goes on and on and on. So they have complete control of all of this. Let's move into post 2489. Now it looks like Q put up more placeholders because we know what's coming. They're going to unseal the indictments and declass. What we're seeing here, these are placeholders for the Inspector General, the Office of the Inspector General. And the first one is the OIG report and findings. The second placeholder is the OIG report for the FBI, Department of Justice, and media collusion. The next one is the OIG report, Executive Branch, ABCs, the FBI, Department of Justice, CIA, and media collusion. The next one is Foreign Assistance, D1. The next one is Foreign Inserts, Record and Info Dissemination. The next one is FISA Abuse, Direct Indirect Sources. Next one is Umbrella Spy and Targeting, UK FISA Non-FISA Special Ops. The last one is Off the Record, Gmail, Xbox, PlayStation Communications. These are off the record. This is why Q has been mentioning this so much. Let's move into post 2490. Q put up fake news, brackets bold optics, false majority blue wave. Next line, blue wave, brackets optics, no voter irregularities, nothing to see here. fake news.
I'm going to put up the full report by X22, but thank you very much for listening tonight.